Hey there, it's Rory Vaden. You are about to hear an interview of me interviewing my mother, telling the story of her real life. And I wanted to give you a trigger warning that this story is her real life story, and we are going to cover some topics that might trigger, you know, intense emotional responses. And we are covering topics of abortion and also domestic violence and alcoholism and things that were a part of her life. And I just want to let you know that ahead of time. So this is a departure from our normal scheduled programming. And it's the true story of my mom and how I came to be. And so I just want to give you a heads up if you want to skip past this. Also, you know, this is not the general direction or content or theme of our podcast. This is a special Mother's Day edition that we wanted to share so you could really understand where I came from and where she came from and all the people who helped us. And a part of that is understanding some dramatic parts of her real life story. So just a heads up, we try to keep it tasteful and brief and not too in depth, but those are parts of her story. And so they are shared in this interview. All right. I hope you find it encouraging and uplifting.
Welcome to the Influential Personal Brand Podcast. This is the place where you'll learn cutting-edge personal brand strategies from today's most recognizable influencers. We're going to teach you how to build a rock-solid reputation and then how to turn that reputation into revenue. I'm your lead host, Rory Vaden, co-founder of Brand Builders Group, Hall of Fame speaker, and New York Times bestselling author of Take the Stairs.
Welcome back to this special Mother's Day edition of the Influential Personal Brand Podcast. If you missed the first half of this interview, I am interviewing my mom, and I am sharing the story of her real life and where we started as a family and where we came from and how some of her personal choices shaped the environment that I grew up in and where I came from. In the first episode, my mom opened up about the story, the true story about her becoming pregnant at age 17, a teenage mother who then went on to have two abortions, was divorced twice by the time she was 23 years old, and had two children from two different men. And she walks through what it was like in those early days of us growing up. And then in this episode, we are going to pick up in the story where we're talking about how did we survive financially in the early years? And who were some of the people that really helped cover the gap for us? So we're going to pick up here in that part of the story. And then we're going to continue talking through the rest of the story, which is how and when does my mom get free from the shame and the guilt of having two abortions? What happens? When does our life turn around when we meet the man that I call dad, my adopted father, Kevin? How does that all come to place? And then we are going to also hear the story of where my mom has come and how her faith walk has changed. And then we will look back on the entire story and talk about how did she do it? How did she pull this off? Single mom, making $5 an hour, divorced twice, under the age of 23, with two abortions, living in a state all by herself. So that's the story, and that's what we have in store. I hope you enjoy this episode.
We had friends, but the biggest friend was one of my other coworkers, Dano. Dano's been in your life since you were born. And, you know, he didn't have a family at the time. And, you know, he spent a lot of time helping me with you guys, paying for jackets at Christmas. And, you know, he was the reason you went to Kung Fu school. So, yeah, I mean,
for these people, these are your coworkers and your friends are the ones buying us Christmas presents.
Yeah. Well, one year we were on the, see, the challenge for me, for us, was that I would not make enough money to cover our expenses, but I didn't qualify. Low income housing, I was on the list for 5 years. And after you turned two, we were no longer eligible for WIC, and we weren't eligible for the gas LEAP and the oil. That there was a lot of stuff we were not eligible for because I made too much money, like $20. Sometimes they would raise the guideline. So $30 more than the guideline, that was all. I was not getting any child support from Tom. and very little from Dan. So I never received a dime of child support from Tom, ever.
You're working, and so you're making enough money that we don't qualify for a lot of the low-income stuff, but you don't make enough money to cover really the expenses. And so basically, what I hear you saying is like, that gap was really covered by friends. It was really covered by colleagues, coworkers.
Absolutely. And God, I mean, God provided, you know, my faith was, this is also a point in time that I went back to church. Now, I did not, we went to the Methodist church. Don and Shelley wanted me to go to the Methodist church and Lenny Love did it. So we went to the Methodist church and I started teaching Bible study. And I loved being back in church. I started teaching third grade Bible. And so we did that. And then when we moved to Louisville, you know, we went to St. Louis. We went back to a Catholic church. So we were in church, although the shortfall never came from the church. It just came from the network of friends that I worked with. It was the people that I worked with, you know. But one of the things, your mom always loved people. I always knew I wanted to be a coach and I always wanted to be a counselor, you know. And I don't know if this is a good time to say, you know, dreams get shattered by words. Words are so powerful. When I was 14, 15 years old, my mama said to me, how could you be a counselor? You can't even help your own sister. Because I had a sister that was very bipolar and a lot of issues. And so I was like, okay, I guess that's not what I'm going to be.
Oh, just like that. She said that one thing and you internalized it and you're like, I can't, I'll never be a counselor to take care of other people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we've got all these people, Uncle Charlie, Don and Shelley, Dano, Eric,
Chuck,
Becky. These people are taking care of us. They're providing us, helping with Christmas presents, stuff like that. I know that you mentioned one time that there was somebody that you worked with who, oh, that was Eric. Yeah. So Eric was like your bank.
My bank. Bank of Eric.
And so does the story really, really start to turn when we meet Dad?
Yes. I guess I would say yes.
Like financially.
Well, we met the Phillipses though. See,
before.
Right. At the same time almost. So what happens is, so now I finally get to get our own place on Cleveland Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a low income housing government program. And so I was able to qualify to purchase this place. And so this was in Lafayette, and so, which is like the next town over. And so you were little, you were going to St. Louis and then you had to go to Lafayette Elementary. So you were like in fourth grade or something like that, I think, when we were able to do fourth or fifth grade.
I remember I went to St. Louis Elementary.
Just up until
through third grade. And then, yeah. And then
third grade, you didn't, I don't even know if you, did you go third grade or just second? I thought it was just Miss Cava.
No, it was third grade. Cause I transferred to, yeah, maybe it was halfway through third grade. I think.
Yeah. I think it was like halfway through third grade. So anyway, and the only reason you got to go there was because the priest at the time allowed me to work my tuition off. I would clean the daycare and I would.
In addition to your normal job.
Right.
Okay, so you had your job at Storage Tech, but then you were working extra hours to basically pay for tuition for us to go to school there. For me to go to school there. And so then we meet the Phillips, who you met through Storage Tech.
Right, but this is the thing about the Phillips. Is this is why God works in mysterious ways. I had to move out of my apartment. We had to move out of our apartment on Meade in May. And because of the government and all the issues with the house and all that stuff, it wasn't going to be ready until July. So for 2 months, we didn't have a place to live. And Chris was, she had just started working for Chuck, my boss's boss, Frank Gunn. So she was an executive admin. She was working for the VP. And I walk into her office after I found out that they had to extend the paperwork and everything, and we weren't going to get the house until July. I'd already given notice. We were already going to be out by May. We had to be out by May 1st. So she sees that I'm upset and distraught. I knew her maybe for like less than a week. She asked me, you know, what's the matter? And I told her, we don't have a place to live. I don't know what we're going to do. And that's when she said, you can move in with us. Your house is right around the corner from us. with your new place. And, you know, she had two girls, Katie and Britt, that were your age, and Randy's are close to it, and a wonderful husband, Dave.
She'd known you for a week and said, come live with us.
Yeah, I hadn't even met her husband or her kids. She didn't know who you guys were. She said, we always wanted to know what it'd be like to have sons. They want brothers.
Yeah, clearly they hadn't met us because they were in for a rowdy rude awakening.
Yes, that's when Brittany broke her arm, remember?
When me and Randy moved in. Yeah, that's amazing. So she just said, come live with us.
She hadn't even asked her husband.
And that shows you who runs the show in families, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
We got people moving in, by the way.
And I guess they had had some, you know, exchange students. And again, she loved people. And even though we were only living with them for 2 months, it was right down the street. And so they had a big home. And so you had your birthday parties there, and we had Easters and Thanksgivings there. And we became very close. And, you know, they were your sisters. And, you know, that's kind of, but we had to live in their basement.
Yeah, we lived in their basement, but that was a lot better than the dungeon.
Exactly.
And then basically Dano had gotten me started into martial arts when I was five. And then
when you were three, you came out kicking. When you were three, he started teaching you front kicks and side kicks and all that kind of stuff. And then when you were five, sixes, I was able to afford to put you in community taekwondo classes. However, when you were about 7 and a half, 8 years old, your teacher, Nina, said you were a special kid and you needed special instruction and private lessons. Mama couldn't afford that. And so Dan stepped up and said, we will find a school and I will pay for it. And that's when we went to Shaolin Kung Fu. It was all adults, just a couple of women, mostly men. And you went there and Dan paid for a month because they had never had any kids even want to go. And this was a couple of years. Sharon, I don't even remember the other name.
Sharon and David Sword. They owned it and they ran the...
They were your senseis.
Yeah.
And so they said, I guess we could give it a try. And Dan paid for a month and said, if he can't keep up after a week, you could keep the money and we'll go to find another place. And after the first night, everybody forgot you were a kid. They called you Sponge because you could absorb the forms. And that first night is where you met Dad. And because of timing, if you have not read the story about Rory and his dad, go buy the book, Take the Stairs, because Rory does a really good job about that.
Mm-hmm. You can also hear that story in my TED Talk. You know, if you Google Roy Vaden TED Talk or How to Multiply Time, I tell the whole story of Dad coming in on his motorcycle with his leather jacket and his tattoos and his long hair and his goatee. Like, and, you know, he was
not my type.
He was scary to me and not your type. And he just was this gentle, kind man, and we became basically best friends. We advanced through the belt levels together. He starts taking me home, dropping me off. We would practice forms together on the weekend. He starts taking me to the movies.
Let's stand corrected.
Oh, okay. Let's correct the story. Okay.
Let's correct the story.
Let's correct the story once and for all. By the way, that's what this is. This is a media correction.
Yes.
That's what this podcast is. We're documenting the details. Okay, so correct the story.
Okay, so 6 months after you guys are doing your Shaolin thing, and you were right about that, I go in because, you know, I figure, okay, I need to somehow, this is your friend. He was your friend, but he would help me because I couldn't be at the football field and the karate studio at the same time. So he was basically your taxi service. So one day he comes over to me and he says to me, what about lunch? You know, this weekend. And I looked at him and I said, what about a movie? And your dad goes, for the first time, he looked me up and down as Tessie, not as Rory's mom. And he said, what about a movie? So that night, when we get home, I tell you, you're 8 and a half years old. No, you're 9 by this time. You're 9. And I said, we're going to a movie. This is right before Thanksgiving, November. And you said, great. What movie are we going to go see? And I said, no, you're not invited. And you put your hands on your hips. And he looked at me and you said, you're going on a date with my friend? I said, Rory, it's not a date. It's just a movie. And you go, don't you make my friend mad at me, mama. And I said, oh, Rory, I'll try not to, but it's just a movie. And as you turned, walked down the steps, you went, yes. And that was at the first moment that I thought maybe your dream would come true and you would get a dad. And basically, Kevin Bacon and I have been together ever since that night. And yes, we as a family had gone to lots of movies since then, but you had never gone to a movie without me and just him before that.
So we test for our black belts together when I'm 10. Mm-hmm. You guys get married. He adopts me.
Mm-hmm.
I change my last name from Rory McLaughlin to Rory Vaden.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have been married over 25 years ever since.
We're going to be married 30 years this August.
Uh-huh. Dad changed everything for us. I mean,
well, it did, except we need to tell the story about Dad real quick. Okay, so my faith is growing, and we didn't know if we were going to make it. We can make it work. And one night, Kevin and I stayed up till 2 a.m, and we talked about our differences, and we talked about all kinds of things. And we agreed that if we didn't talk politics or religion, that the marriage could work. And so we didn't. But at that time, my faith was still shattered because I was still carrying all that guilt. And I still didn't believe that the Lord could forgive me or had forgiven me.
You're talking about from the abortions.
Yeah. And And, you know, getting married and divorced twice doesn't exactly go along with the Ten Commandments either. So,
sure.
So yes. So all of that.
What year is that?
That was in 1994 that we got married.
Okay. And that's when you had that talk?
Oh, no. We had that talk in 1991 or 1992.
Was shortly after you were married.
It was when we were started dating.
And oh, it was before
we went out
you got
in November. Yeah. And then we had that talk.
I got you. Because you're going to church and he wasn't into that.
Right. Exactly.
And the deal was you can go to church, do your thing, but don't ask me to come. Don't like, you know, do whatever you want to do, but don't ask me into that part of your life, basically.
Correct. And he had been raised a Nazarene in the Church of Nazarene by his grandma. And he went to church till he was 16. And then he studied Buddhism and all of that. And he was not for organized religion. He's like, nope, this isn't for me. I don't care about Jesus. I don't want to know about Jesus, you know? And I'm like, fine. And he's like, I will support you and you can take the kids, but don't ask me to go. But he agreed to go to one Christmas thing a year, but it couldn't be church. It had to be like a Christmas concert, you know, go see a Christmas movie, something like that.
Gotcha. I gotcha. So you guys make that pact, you get married, he starts making more money, you start making more money, me and Randy are getting a little bit older, like we're starting to become a little bit more sustainable. You're still carrying the guilt and the shame of your abortions.
Right.
What happened? At this point, I didn't even know you'd ever had an abortion. No. And I didn't know that till years later. What happened when
nobody knew?
How did you,
25 years?
Nobody knew.
Nobody knew. When I would go in for doctor's appointments, I had 2 live births and 2 miscarriages. If you go back to the records, that's what all the records said.
So for 25 years, you're carrying this secret, these mm-hmm. secrets.
Mm-hmm.
When does that get resolved? And how does that get resolved to where you start to talk about it? And I mean, here you are like, you know, being open about something very intimate and shameful, well, embarrassing, whatever word you want to use, like very private. What happened? How did you get to this place emotionally and spiritually about those 2 incidents?
Okay, well, a lot happened, but I'm going to just try to give the highlights. The biggest thing was in 2002, after you had started college and you had gotten that full scholarship. And I had told you guys that, you know, you always had to have a dream. You always had to be something. Because of my brother's death, my boys were not, they were always going to have goals. That's why you set goals. They were going to know how to read and write, and they were going to always have goals. Randy wanted to be a cop. And so I'm like, great. Even though I didn't really want him to, kept him up from drugs, kept him from stealing when he was in high school, all of that, junior high. And then, do you remember what you wanted to be?
Yeah, I mean, I went through a few phases, but I remember wanting to be a dentist because of Dr. Wayne Zarlingo, who was my dentist. I also remember wanting to be a pilot because Top Gun was cool. And then I wanted to be a karate guy because I was into Karate Kid and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But mostly it was I wanted to be a dentist, like Dr. Zarlingo. I remember that.
You started going to him when you were 3 until you were like 13.
So now I'm in college.
So now you're in college. You got this scholarship.
So I'm out of the house. Randy's out of the house. Randy becomes very successful. He joins the Navy.
He's in the Navy. So he hasn't done anything except be in the Navy right now.
Yeah. But he graduates school. He plays football. Like he is a starter, varsity football player, finishes finishes high school, goes to the Navy. And then you are.
So I'm married. We're in Frederick. I had started my Mary Kay business after we got married. So I was starting to be around positive women, right? I was starting to, you know, we had gone to a church and there was the little Catholic church in Frederick. I was going to there, meeting friends and stuff like that. So what happened was in 2002, you said to me, when are you going to go start your dream? Because I had always shared with you that I wanted to go to college. And so I started college. I went to Front Range Community College for a couple of years and got my associates. And, you know, I was in my 40s at the time. And then basically it took me 7 years to get a 4-year degree. But then I went to the University of Phoenix. And so my last year, my degree was in human services and management.
From the University of Phoenix.
Right. I always wanted to help people. People used to be drawn to me and I would, you know, I know my family thinks I talk too much, but I actually would listen and ask questions and stuff like that. And so people just liked me. And
you had the dream of being a counselor. Like you had that from the time you were a little girl.
Right. Yeah. Even when I was growing up, people would flock to me, tell me about their parents or whatever, going through divorces. I don't know that.
Hi, it's AJ Vaden, and thanks for listening to the Influential Personal Brand Podcast. Did you know that the ideas we share on the show are things we actually specialize in helping you implement? If you want to raise your public profile and turn your reputation into revenue, please visit freecall.brandbuildersgroup.com to sign up for a free brand strategy call with one of our personal brand strategists. Again, that's freecall.brandbuildersgroup.com to sign up for your free call. Talk to you soon.
So I had to do a paper and I had to do it on a nonprofit. And this was it wasn't until 2008. But before this happened, let's talk about your dad for a minute. So we're going along. My faith is growing. I'm teaching Bible studies. I'm actually facilitating. I'm actually volunteering at LifeBridge. I got baptized when we moved there across the street. And then you came and started going when you were in college. I got to baptize you. That was a highlight of my life. But in 2007, the bottom fell out. And we had been married since 1994. So almost 13 years. And it was the worst year of our marriage. But it was the strongest year of my faith up until then. And so what happened was I got tired of going to church by myself. I got tired of, you know, not being able to have my church friends over, or when they would invite me to do things, always as couples, I had to go by myself. And so my pastor, he wasn't the head pastor. He was my pastor of my LifeBridge group, Pastor David. I went to him. And I said, I can't do this anymore. Your dad had lost his job. You know, somebody accused him of hit and run. That's the year your grandma died. I mean, there was a lot going on. You were gone. And so he told me, he said, Tessie, it doesn't matter. You know what the Bible says. It doesn't matter that you've had 2 divorces and been married twice. It doesn't matter about the divorce. All your sins are forgiven. What matters now is that you are in this marriage and you know what that means. You cannot walk away. You need to be the example. You need to love him. If he chooses to walk away, that's different. But as a believer, And a follower of Jesus, you can't do that. You need to start praying for him. And oh, by the way, my wife, Ruth Ann, has been praying for Kevin's salvation for the last 3 years. This is what he told me. And so he said, and one more thing, you will not be the one that brings Kevin to faith. You probably won't, but your example will. So anyway, so let's fast forward to 2008. So what happened was I end up going to Life Choice Pregnancy Center to do this paper. And I walk in there and Connie gave me a tour, asked me for a tour. And she brings out this box of embryos, plastic little baby embryos. And my eyes immediately go to the 11 weeks. I hadn't thought about it for a long time consciously. It was all subconscious. And my eyes filled with tears. I couldn't even speak. And she put her arm on me and said, are you post-abortive? I didn't know what that meant. She said, have you ever had an abortion? And I couldn't speak. I was afraid she was going to kick me out. I just shook my head yes. And she
said, your eyes went to 11 weeks because that was, you were 11 and a half weeks pregnant during the second abortion. And so your eyes went, darted straight to that
baby.
That baby in the model.
Yeah. And so then she proceeded to tell me she had to, and that God forgives. And she introduced me to Lisa. She said, you need to meet Lisa. And Lisa was the counselor that did the Forgiven and Set Free classes. And I did that for 11 weeks. And then I did it for 20 more weeks in training. And then I was able to start helping others accept, you know, that. And I was also, after that, I was able to counsel women. So I was starting to work at the pregnancy center. And I was able to help women that came into the pregnancy center scared and afraid and not knowing what to do. And, you know, that kind of thing. So I did that. And then I graduated in 2000. And I started working at LifeBridge Christian Church on staff. I've been there for 14 years volunteering when you know, number one volunteer, but on staff as the director of single parents. And grew that ministry to about 150 women. And, you know, I had great mentors. Nancy was a great mentor, and Abby. And so that's where my faith started to just really grow and take shape. And that's when the Lord revealed to me that his plans and his purposes are always going to prevail. And it has. Yes.
What year was that? So what year does that Forgiven and Set Free class happen? Like, what year is it that you finally experience the freedom, feeling free from the weight and the guilt and the shame of those?
2009.
So that's 2009. So 25 years is what ended up being the full. Is that right?
Whatever 2009 is from 1976.
Okay. So that would be 86, 96, 2006. That's 33 years. So that decision stayed with you for 33 years, even though it was a secret. And then you were finally set free of that in 2009.
Right. And look, before 2009, starting in 2000 or whatever, as my faith grew, I told, you know, a couple more people. You learned about it, I think, in 2004 or two, whenever, after you were baptized, stuff like that. Your dad knew about it. You know, your sister knew about it.
Well, so for 25 years, nobody knew about it.
No. And my parents never, they went to the grave not knowing.
Not knowing about either one.
Correct.
And then it sort of gradually starts to happen. So, all right, so we got to land the plane here. I want to hear the story. We need to have Randy on the podcast. I'm going to have Randy on the podcast because I want to hear his story. We haven't gotten to hear much about my brother's story. And my brother has an amazing story, especially here, like recently, some of the things he's done with his bodybuilding competition. I'm realizing we need to have Randy on too. But I want to hear, tell me, fast forward, you have all these friends. You're resourceful. You're building relationships. People are helping us. You're starting to get on your feet. Dad comes into the picture. We start growing. Your faith is strengthening. You know, you have your faith all along. Quickly walk us through what happened to Dad on his faith journey, and then tell us where are you at now?
Okay. Well, so with Dad, basically the climate in Colorado started getting, the political climate started to turn and stuff like that. And people started, you know, the government was infringing on his rights, gun rights and stuff like that. And the world was getting dark. And so Dad and I started actually having some conversations on religion and politics. And so deep conversations. And, you know, I just remember one day saying that, you know, I understand, but I know where I'm going. I know where I'm headed. and I have joy and peace, and I will always have it. And so anyway, he started going to church a little bit more and wanting me to pray at meals and stuff like that. And then he started, you know, listening to Phil Robertson and their sermons. And
for Phil Robertson, for those of you that don't know, so my dad starts watching Duck Dynasty, the show. Right.
The show.
And he's watching Duck Dynasty and he's learning about this family. And then from there, he starts watching Phil Robertson's sermons.
Right. But, you know, I don't believe that it was just a TV show that changed your dad's heart, although it did. But the
of course not.
Jesus was working on his heart all this time. Your dad used to be the most Christian, non-Christian man. And that's how I used to introduce him to people that I knew. And he loved his family.
And, meaning the way that he exhibited the virtues of, like, you know, patience and kindness and love and self-control.
Fruits of the spirits, yeah.
All the fruits of the spirit, yes, whatever absolutely. That Galatians verse is. I think it's a Galatians verse. Yeah, that was my dad all along. That's why you fell in love with him. And then, but he was not a Christian, but he exhibited those. But then he starts watching Duck Dynasty. Duck Dynasty leaves in Phil Robertson. He's going to church. He's seeing you set free. You know, he's seeing my faith, which has always been, like, for the most part, strong, especially when I was going door to door, like him calling.
Well, that's when it got stronger.
It got really stronger.
Right, exactly. So yeah, and so then he starts coming to church Easter and Christmas a year, and then anyway, he wanted to get baptized, and we were just about ready to celebrate 20 years of marriage, and we got back from church. I'll never forget. And he said, you know, he wanted to, and I was just thrilled. And he said, thank you for never giving up on me. And I said, you know, how could I? You know, God never, ever, ever, ever gave up on me. And so he got baptized on your 32nd birthday. And do you remember what you said when you were, unfortunately, you were in Paris at the time. Do you remember what you said to him when he told you? Because we Zoomed you. We wanted to tell you right away.
I remember a poem that I wrote about him when I was in middle school called "The Lord, Will You Let Him In?" I remember writing that poem
for him. Well, you had said, Dad, this is the best birthday present you will ever be able to give me. Mm-hmm. Ever.
So 20 years, basically, you've been praying for him for 20 years.
Well, Ruth Ann had been praying for him for 10 years. That was the other thing. I never prayed for his salvation until after I had that conversation with Dave, Pastor David. I had never prayed for your father's salvation.
So how long between that, when you started praying for it and when it happened?
2007 to 2016.
So right? 9
somewhere
years.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm. And it's always a series of events. So
God's always chasing after us, always, right? He's always putting people in there.
Mm-hmm. And so you and Dad are married. You know, you stay in Colorado when Randy has his babies, your grandbabies. And then as they got older and started to get the teenage years, AJ and I have our two babies. And so you moved to Tennessee.
Well, I always knew that we were going to move to Tennessee because that's where you were going to land. So
Dad wanted to move back.
No, Dad only didn't want to move. He wanted to move to Bowling Green, Kentucky once the political climate changed. He never thought, like me, that we would ever leave Colorado. And so that's kind of what happened. And so since then, what I've been doing is I truly believe, you know, that your spiritual and your physical health are tied together. I always have believed that. And so many times, you know, people bottle up all of this. We all have a story. We all made poor choices. And God has, you know, he can free any of us. And so I have a biblical counseling practice. And I also help people with their nutrition through plant powders. And so I'm doing that now. And I get to do that from the comforts of my home. I get to be with my grandkids and with you all. And yeah, so that's kind of what I'm doing now. And we go to a great church, and I believe that the Lord still has more for me to do. And so I am just trying to listen and follow.
And so you effectively are a life coach. You've got this biblical counseling practice. You're coaching people on their nutrition, so their spiritual and physical health. And so that dream you had all the way back, you got your degree, by the way. Mm-hmm. So you end up surviving all those years, breaking free from the guilt, managing to raise two kids.
Awesome kids, by the way. Two awesome kids. Awesome kids.
You guys will have to be my brother for sure. I got to bring Randy on.
I'm so proud of you both.
And then Kevin has a son. So we get, you know, Sean comes into our family.
Yep. So I get three kids.
You guys start to own your own property. We make it through college. Sean has a family. He gets married. He's got kids and grandkids. And then now you are doing biblical counseling, life coaching, and talking to a lot of women who have going through some rendition of some hard time.
Right, right. Exactly. You know, exactly. So one of my people gave me this a long time ago, and it says, only God can turn a mess into a message. This was one of my single moms gave this to me, and it sits on my desk because I also, you know, oh, I did say that about that single mom. And so anyway, I think that that's what he has done and will continue to do. So I just have one final thought that, you know, you asked me one time ago how I did this.
Yeah. So before we do that, so where should people go?
Oh, okay. Yes.
They want to connect with you, right? I'm quite certain that somebody listening either is going through some of this or knows someone who is in a rough time in their life, particularly maybe like, you know, a single mom or someone struggling with, you know, things, decisions, choices they made in the past that they're struggling to get past. Where should people go if they want to connect with you?
Tessie Gale at MSN, just my email. So my name, TessieGale at MSN.com, or my Facebook page. And also my affiliate website, which is TessieGale.juiceplus.com.
Mm-hmm. So we'll put links to that. So you can just email my mom and you could talk directly to her, which is great. So yeah. And before you just share your last, you know, thought, mom, I want to know how you did it, but I also just want to make sure that I don't let this opportunity slip by without saying thank you. Thank you for figuring it out. Thank you for finding a way. Thank you for being faithful. Thank you for taking care of me and Randy. Thank you for the choices, the decisions that you've made. You know, I also want to say to our friends and family, so many people in this story, thank you. You know, thank you to all the people that we mentioned here, the people who are buying us dinner and buying us Christmas presents and just covering the gap and covering that spread of our practical needs. I'm just so grateful for them. And I'm so grateful, mom, for your resourcefulness to build relationships. Of all the superpowers to have, I mean, building relationships is a good one. And so many people just covered that gap for us. And I'm just so grateful. And I'm grateful for Dad. And I'm grateful for Randy for raising me and Dano and the Phillips and Uncle Charlie and Don and Shelley and, you know, Eric and Betsy and all, I mean, just all of the so many people that we didn't even name, you know, teachers in my story, friends who, you know, some were there for seasons, some just for a moment, but so many people who, and this is why I wanted to share the story, is it's like, there is no such thing as a self-made person. There's no such thing as a self-made entrepreneur, a self-made millionaire, a self-made bestseller. Like, there's no such thing as a self-made. It's a series of people over generations that make choices that help somebody become the person that you one day see. And so in the case of my life, mom, thank you for being the point person, you know, for me. I'm so grateful for that.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome, Lori. And, you know, I always knew that God had a plan. Yeah, I mean, he did, and he does. And so I'm just grateful that I don't ever want you to forget that. It's that there are so many people in our life that made us our life possible, right? And always will be. You know, in faith, hope, and love, you know, Rory came to me one time and said, you should be a statistic. How come we're not a statistic? And I said to you, this was when you were in high, freshman in college.
Right. Because everything in your story, I mean, that's part of why I wanted to share this, is like everything in your story points to our life should have gone a totally different direction. I mean, we met all the criteria in many ways of like a life that would be far, far different from the life that we have now. We always had love, but like we could have gone a different direction. So, yeah, I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I had faith the size of a mustard seed in the beginning. And due to all the trials in my life, I took Mark 9:23 from the head to the heart, right? And I started to believe that all things are possible for him who believes. All things. And that grew in roots. And then I had hope. Jeremiah 29:11 became my life verse in the early 2000s. And it was like, you know, he has a plan. He knew his plans for us, and he still has one for my future. And he always was there. His plans were always there. And you mentioned love. I am a firm believer. I've seen it through thousands of children. We didn't even talk about the coaching for 5 years that I did as a single parent with those boys for soccer. 5 years. But I've seen it in all my life, is that his deep, deep love for me, I began to trust him and continue to bring love and surrounding me with love of others. And I was able to trust him once I finally did learn to love and be set free freely, completely. So he has made my path straight to grow in love for myself and for you boys and for others. The love from just one person can change a person's circumstance in life. That's the other lesson that I hope you and all of those listening understand. One person. And the love of Jesus, which there is no greater love, will change one life for all eternity. I have lived and learned this and will share it until the day he takes me home. Thank you, Lord, for this day. May your blessings come our way. Keep us safe, whatever we do, and let us never forget to keep our eyes on you.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Influential Personal Brand Podcast. But here's some great news. One of the most valuable things you can do to help us and other new potential listeners to find our show is for you to both rate this show and leave a review. So, as a special bonus for you, if you leave us a comment in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen, take a screenshot of your review and email it to podcast@brandbuildersgroup.com. We will give you free 30-day access to 25 of our most popular interviews on video in your own private members-only area. So go right now, rate us, review us, and then send a screenshot of it into podcast@brandbuildersgroup.com. And we'll get you set up with free access to our most popular video interviews all in one place. Also, just please share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. And until next time, remember that building a business isn't nearly as valuable as building a reputation.